adesso parte il tiro, rete, 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 un gol straordinario.
Welcome to Rated This Way, a culture podcast that brings the latest and greatest news from the world of Serie A and European soccer. My name is Michael D'Angelo, and with us, as always, you have Paolo Nobiloni Magoni.
Welcome back, everyone.
We've got Julian Gigi D'Angelo.
How's everybody doing tonight?
And we've got no Mr. Chris Baselli. We've given the day off. He's being an adult, so we've allowed him the that privilege, I guess.
Yeah, every few months, right?
That's it. Yeah, I mean he's clearly a bigger man than all of us, in terms of being actually, again, probably smart,
and being an adult.
So again, we like to give him the time when he needs it. Oh God! But what I am gonna miss though, without Mister here. Is, you know, he keeps us in check. He provides structure. And I think like Paulo specifically is someone who needs structure, and Paulo, you tend to, I guess, misbehave perhaps when the mister's gone.
Well, I misbehave. I think it's taking cheap shots at Milan Twitter, I think that's what it is, or just Milan in general.
In general,
yeah. So I don't know. I would call it misbehaving. I think it's just cheap shots.
Yeah, you take liberties.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, that's better. That's a better word to describe it.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Okay. Well, welcome to the show, everybody. We had some Celentano to open up the show. Salutation. Outside of the fact that, again, the first line is that gas is always costing more and more. What can you tell us about this song, Paulo, and why we chose it?
Well, I mean, considering that it was written in 1976 and it feels like nothing's changed since then, right? But we chose it. It's, again, nothing has changed. I think... Mourinho made a comment post-match about something happening 20 years ago and the same thing happening in 2022. You know, just goes to show that more time passes, the more things don't change.
Just it's valuation.
It's valuation, exactly.
this is exactly what it is. This is coming from a guy who literally made a song of gibberish.
Listen, it's considered to be the first ever rap song in history.
By you.
No, by music historians. Okay. It's very famous. It became very famous in English, like in North America. I think the first time it went viral was when a few years after YouTube was founded. And then it went viral again on Twitter. And on Reddit, I think it was, that went viral again.
Just because it's a little absurd. It's a song that's gibberish.
Well, no. So it's like it's a song. If you watch there's a video in Italian where he sings it live, and he explains it. There's a whole setting of a classroom, mm-hmm. and one of the quote unquote students asked him a question. He said, "Professore, why did you write a song that doesn't mean anything. And essentially what his response is A, that how Italians sound like when they're speaking English, and B, it's the incommunicability of language.
In what sense, though?
Well, in the sense that some people don't understand what you're saying. You could be saying something and you still don't understand it. In that sense.
Yeah, but that's just like the song in general. It's general nonsense, what you just said.
Anyways, we're getting a little off track here.
I like the song. It's a good song. You hate it for some reason.
I don't hate it, actually. I think it's funny. If that's what you're going for.
Honestly, I think Chris and Julian hate it.
Yeah, possibly. Possibly.
I don't know. I kind of side with Michael. It's not a bad song. It's catchy, but yeah, it's just absurd.
Yeah, yeah. I agree with that.
I mean, it's Italy in the 70s. The whole country was absurd.
There you go.
Fair point.
There you go. Fair point. Okay, well, let's move on. As Julian has said, let's get into the actual business here. We had our fun, but we obviously have a lot to get through. So we're going to get through our Serie A matches for match day. It was 35. Mm-hmm. We are going to, go through the gamut of games here. And we'll obviously have some bigger discussions about the table, because there's obviously some really there's some really important results that have happened that have really solidified some positions and kind of thrown others into into a frenzy. And then of course we have had the Conference League this past week, and we have it again next week. So we'll get through that possibly in the second half. Of course, we have a Serie B minute. There's so much to get to. So again, we'll start with Serie A and we'll get into the rest as we get to it.
So, actually, before you jump into match day 35, I just realized we have the midweek games, the makeup games.
Oh, Mamma Mia, you're right.
Yeah. We're Inter blew their chance to take first place.
We almost, can you believe that? We almost forgot.
The Radu blunder.
To bring up how Inter have pissed away. The city.
I'm ashamed of you two. I feel like you would have been all over that.
You know what? I understand that. I understand that sentiment, but at the same time, I feel like we don't care anymore. Like it kind of lost its sparkle, I guess. Maybe when Juve got out. Paul and I have been out of it for a month, so we don't care.
I forgot is because another round of games happened this weekend. Yeah, that's probably why.
Yeah, and again, to that point, it really, Julian, you're saying that obviously that happened, something important happened with Inter, and we'll get to it, but and then after this match, again, things really started to like solidify, so this past match day, I'll say. So again, to be fair, to Paulo's point, he's right that there's so much more that have happened since then, but that's just crazy because it's been a week of just
Well, I pulled the games up now. I can quickly just glaze over them.
Yeah. Start with, was it Fiorentina
Udinese? So, first one, Fiorentina Udinese. Fiorentina got ruined 4-0 at home, too. Udinese just walked the park. Pablo Mari scored, then De La Feu, and then Wallace in the 91st, and then Udoji in the 95th.
Yeah. So that effectively tanks for, well, doesn't take Fiorentina necessarily, but it really
Had a slight like outside chance at top four, and then exactly. After that was
but again, this really just cemented their place on fifth through eighth.
Then after that was Atalanta Torino. This one was actually a entertaining game, lots of goals. It ended 4-4 with four PKs, an own goal. Torino went up 1-0, then Atalanta 2-1, then Torino was up 4-2, and then Atalanta came back and tied it at 4 before the end of the game.
For me, this just solidified that Busso is just an average goalkeeper.
Yeah, I had high hopes for him this year, but he really hasn't kind of lived up to that hype. I wanted Inter to get him, and it's looking like they dodged a bullet.
Well, we'll get to that in a second.
Hey, listen, he's on his way out. So the big game, obviously, yeah, was Inter-Bologna, because then it'll finally kind of figure out where everybody sits.
It started off very well, right?
It did. Well, prior to the game, we found out Handanovic was having back issues, I believe it was, so he was not actually starting. So Andre Radu was in the making his first appearance in the league. He had one appearance in the Coppa Italia against Empoli and didn't really impress all that much, if I'm being honest. So game started, Perisic scored a fantastic goal, solo effort. I think nutmegged, might have been Barrow, and then Rocket shot into the top left corner. But then Inter, I mentioned before with Inzaghi, and as much as I chirp you guys for the Cortomuso, there are times when Inzaghi needs to learn to just sit back and grind out a win. He kept trying to play his attack, and yes, Inter should have scored another goal or two, and they didn't. But all it took was one long ball into the box. De Vrij, I guess, tried to let DeMarco take Arnautovic, which is a huge, huge mismatch. And Arnautovic was wide open for a header to make it 1-1. Inter pushed a little bit, just couldn't find that go-ahead goal. Then the nightmare in the 82nd minute. I think it was actually started because of a Gagliardini misplaced header, which kind of pinned Inter on their own end. They managed to win a throw-in. Perisic takes the throw-in, decides to throw it all the way back to Radu, which that in itself probably wasn't the best decision. But anyways, Radu takes his eye off the ball, goes to sweep it across to D'Ambrosio and completely whips on it. And then Sansone is running in to tap into a wide open net. So Bologna win the game 2-1. So the reason that hurts Inter dramatically is because even if it was a 1-1 draw, it still forced Milan to be perfect. They had to win out the remaining four games. Now Milan can actually afford to even tie one of their remaining four games at the time, because they have the tiebreaker on Inter. So they need to effectively drop 3 points and Inter need to win out.
Right.
All right. So let's just break down what happened on that goal. Okay. So, Julian, as you said correctly, the decision to even throw it to Radu is suspect. You know, I remember if Mister was here, he would always say, when in doubt, throw it down the line. Because that's, you know, I think all of us knew that from growing up, is, you know, never played back to your goalkeeper unless you have no pressure on you and you're have plenty of time on the ball. That did not happen. Radu, being a young goalkeeper and being penned in, didn't help as well. You can tell
it's his second appearance all season, which doesn't help. You know what I mean? If he'd played maybe 5-10 games, but he hadn't, so he's cold basically going in. He's nervous,
and wasn't expected to start either.
Yeah.
But what I wanted to touch on is the rule about scoring directly from a throw-in. So if Sansone didn't touch the ball, which as an attacking player, it was good instinct to tap that ball in, because if he didn't do that, there would have been a question if Radu even touched the ball. So if he didn't touch the ball, it would have been the goal would have been called off, and it would have been a Bologna corner, I believe. So by him touching the ball, just wipes away all any evidence of error or decision making from the referees, and, you know, essentially gave Bologna that goal. So it was a good play by Sansone. And speaking about Sansone, I want to touch on this. I wish Mr. Chris was here, because after the game, he said, I think what the quote was, "I hope Maldini is watching. I hope he brings me to Milan because I want to play in the Champions League." I mean, okay. I mean, where to start? Number one, you know, this is I don't want to get political, but put it this way. Serie A put in a rule to have players vaccinated. He stalled until that rule came in. And then makes a comment like that and essentially spitting in the face of Bologna fans by saying that, you know, if he gets a better offer, he's going to leave.
You know, it was also funny because the Twitter was all up in arms earlier last week when Pinamonti scored and then said he was hoping Inter would win. So it was a little bit ironic when that happened after the
Oh, yeah. I mean, when it comes to MT, everything is ironic. You know, there's a sense of hypocrisy that they change their position every 2 weeks by because it whatever it suits them. You know, the consistency and MT doesn't go well together. You know, it's a joke. When someone says
consistent
MT. Yeah, exactly. Something like that. And, you know, then talking about how, you know, Pioli says something about how the refs have to be better. And you know, shit like this happens. Anyway, we'll get to the Milan game. I'm getting ahead of myself.
Yeah, okay. Well, that really set up a big finish, I guess, for the top of the table, especially because, like Julian kind of alluded to, Milan doesn't need to be perfect anymore, but if they are, obviously, they'll obviously take it. They've been going into this, I think they had a 2-point lead, if I'm not mistaken, because of that game. Whereas, again, if Inter won, Julian, they would have been leading by 1 point, correct?
Yes, they would have.
Right. So then it would have been, it would have been Inter's effectively to lose at that point. Now it's Milan's to lose. But let's get into all those games then in match day 35, and we'll kind of talk about again the table once we get to that juncture of these games. So let's start off with Cagliari, who were host to Verona. They actually come out 2-1 loser. So Verona wins 2-1. Barak scores early. Caprari scores in the 44th before Joe Pedro in the second half. Cut one back for Cagliari. But it's not enough. And Cagliari, after this game, actually relieve their coach of his duties. I don't have the trumpets, but it's a sack race.
Yeah. Julian, we've talked so long and many times of how bad Cagliari are with their contracts and their managers. So
I remember, yeah, when he was first hired, I thought it was like, my initial reaction was, oh no, what are they doing? And then he had that crazy 2-month span where they actually did well. And then now it's back to, oh no, what were they doing?
Well, that's fine. You get that, as Chris would say, the five games where, you know, the five game bump, momentum bump by hire a new manager. But my grievance that I take with is they 2 weeks before they sacked Di Francesco, they gave him, what was it? was it a 4-year extension?
Something like that.
Something stupid. Yeah. A 4-year, and then sacked him. So they're probably still paying him.
So now talk about Mazzarri's contract.
Yeah, so Mazzarri's, there's reported, I think Sport Italia reported that in the contract, if Mazzarri kept Cagliari outside of the relegation zone and he was sacked, that they would pay him for another 2 years.
Even though this was, it was like a 1-year contract.
Something like that.
Yeah. So effectively, he was going to get paid for another 2 years in addition to this year, if he was sacked, and Cagliari survived,
pretty much.
Yeah. Well, again, they lose. They still, I guess, maintain their lead in the sense that really, if someone, with a win, I guess Salernitana could have caught up to them technically. But again, we'll get to all those games as well. But in any case, they do not do themselves any favors, considering their next couple of games are against a lot of these teams here that are battling with them. 2-1 losers to Verona. Next up, we had Napoli host to Sassuolo. And this was a rout by Napoli. Where was this for the past couple of weeks? I guess they were saving the goals to beat Sassuolo here. Koulibaly scores 7 minutes in. Osimhen scores 15 minutes. Lozano, 19. Mertens brace, 21st and then 54th. Romani in the 80th before Lopez gets a consolation, a late one for Sassuolo. Again, it ends 6-1 for Napoli. Paulo, any notes on this one?
I mean, I think it was a response to losing against Empoli last week.
I guess so, but again, it's just what now they're fighting for third. I guess just to maintain third.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, exactly. To stay in the top four, which well, I guess we could say now
is locked. Yeah,
is locked. Yeah. But you know, it's put it this way: it's a good response. It kind of puts to rest the rumors from Spalletti, you know, being sacked at the end of the season. I think De Laurentiis, you know, knows that securing that Champions League money is big, is important to the club. And you know, I think Julian, as an Inter fan, would know after being outside of the Champions League and then, you know, getting Spalletti, who did that exactly the same thing for Inter, is important. So, you know, to sack him, you would have to bring in a more expansive coach who actually can risk the play. No pun intended. No pun intended. But I guess the only option would be De Zerbi. But again, at a big club, he's unproven, so it'd be a massive risk to take that decision.
Yeah, I think you still give Spalletti 1 year. I know he's. I don't want to say it's been underwhelming for Napoli, because I don't think, like, I think if you told Napoli fans before the season started, okay, you'll finish third, they'd probably be like, yeah, that's great.
Exactly. Yeah. I was going to say the same thing.
Now, obviously, they had their chance to kind of take and run with him. They didn't, but I still feel he deserves more time.
For sure. I was going to say on top of that, that, like, again, if you take into consideration that they had that position and they were, you know, they were showing strong form to start off the season. That, like, again, after seeing that, they're probably a little disappointed to be finishing third. But like you said, going into it, if you told them that, yeah, Napoli would have a solid chance leading into, you know, the last month of the season, they'd take that every time.
Yeah. And especially it would have been interesting to see what happened if Osimhen had never fractured his face on Skriniar.
Right. Yeah.
Or if Koulibaly did win the African Cup of Nations, or whatever it's called, the CAF Cup there. But it would be different if, you know, Koulibaly was present for those games in January, when I'm pretty sure they dropped a few points as well.
Yeah, so all three of the top those top three were doing, had a very poor January, February, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, let's move on here to Samp host to Genoa. And now this game ends 1-0 for Sampdoria, who, really needed to perform after a couple of poor showings. They drew last week, but before then it wasn't looking great. But again, they come out 1-0 victors here over Genoa, who are one of the teams that are trying to battle back and really... possibly endangering Sampdoria's salvation in the league here. But again, with this win, Julian, you were saying it almost kind of secures them a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. It's just, it's crazy, man. The past few weeks have just been nuts.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, again, Jean Paul's not a good coach. I'm sorry. Yeah. He had one good season with Empoli after replacing Sarri, I believe it was back then. That's because Sarri already built that team, and Gianpaolo took it over and really had not much to do but to like maintain it. Here he has to build teams, and it was the same thing with Milan. He was entrusted to build a team and failed, and it's the same thing with here. I know he came in halfway through the season, but. You know, technically that team on paper is better than the team that Ranieri had, and Ranieri finished in ninth.
Yeah, I agree. This game was, I mean, I was kind of rooting for Genoa, like it would have been another great escape, if you will.
Yep.
And yeah, it was 1-0. I actually turned it on. I came home. I was able to literally turn it on the 90th minute. So I saw the PK. Ball just got swung in. Destro got ahead to it and it deflected off Ferrari's arm, I think. And Kishito's like chance to kind of save Genoa before he leaves. And then Adaro, to his credit, made a brilliant save on the PK.
Right. So it could have been a 1-1 in the end, but it ends 1-0.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, there was some professionalism, you know, fair play. I think Adair realized that it absolutely devastated Kishito. So, you know, he came up and I think gave him a kiss as a, you know,
good sportsmanship.
Yeah, exactly. And it's tough to see. You know, guy pretty much played his entire career there. Mm-hmm. Grew up there. It's his hometown, I believe. No, not his hometown, but his youth club.
Right.
You know, to leave on that note,
right? Could have saved him
in his last Genoa derby della Lanterna, and to leave to end that on that, and it's kind of tough.
So Mimo, yeah,
he's Neapolitan.
So he actually, I see, he started with Juve. Is that possible?
Yes, he was at Juventus. He was.
But and maybe possibly loan to Genoa.
Yeah, yeah.
And then again back to Juve for it sounds like some loan to Genoa in B, and then eventually back to Juve, and then sold effectively to Genoa. Then he was presented for a bit. Then
yeah.
Okay.
Well, technically, he could end up at Toronto. We'll see. I don't think it's official yet, like the Insigne one is, but. It's possible.
It sounded like, again, he was supposed to go in March and then decided not to, because obviously Genoa were in this battle, right? So
yeah. Well, I think it's if they didn't sack someone. Who was the manager?
they brought in Shevchenko.
That's right. Yeah, it was Shevchenko. I think if they didn't sack Shevchenko, he was going to leave.
Oh, God. Okay, let's move on here. Another important, I guess, side here in this race are Spezia, and they were host to Lazio on Saturday. And they actually were, they were in good position here. They were up 1-0 early. Amien scores 9 minutes in. Immobile gets a PK in the 33rd and scores. Agudelo in the 35th makes it 2-1 for Spezia before a Provedel own goal in the second half made it 2-2. Shortly after, Spezia get the lead again. Krzysztof in the 56th minute for 3-2. It's relinquished in the 68th when Milinkovic-Savic gets a goal to make it 3-3. And then Lazio with the surprise win here. And it's choice words there, but Lazio with a surprise win. Acerbi scores 90-plus, I believe. And, they take the game 4-3. Now, who wants to explain what the issue was with this and the fallout?
Okay, I'll give it a go. Julian, you maybe can mop up behind me, but
yeah.
So the keeper came out. So because the keeper came out, the rule is for offsides. Yeah.
So explain it first. So explain that part. So
ball was swung in, and I think the keeper came out to grab the ball. So because the keeper came out beyond the line of defenders, so the offside rule is that when the keeper is not there, or it's not there, it's the penultimate defender. So the second to last defender is where the offside line is drawn, essentially. Acerbi was beyond that, so he should have been ruled offside. The VAR missed it, which led to the ref making the wrong decision, and the goal stood. Was that clear? Anyone?
Yeah. No, yeah. I think that was That was good. So I watched the highlights of it. So yeah, originally a shot came in and the keeper made the save. That's why he was a little bit out of his net. But yeah, as soon as he's passed his last defender, they almost switch spots, if that makes sense. So that last defender almost becomes where the keeper would be. So then right. The next second last defender, that's where the offside line would be. Cherubi was in an offside position.
I think to outline it again, in a typical situation, you'd have a goalie in the net, and then you'd have your first defender, you know, outfield player there who's a defender. And if you're the attacking player and you're behind that player, then it's offside because that's the penultimate player at that point because there's still the goalkeeper at the back.
Exactly.
So once the goalkeeper is not in the situation here, he is so far up. Let's say he's at half, right? Which isn't the case, obviously, but let's just say he's effectively at half. When you have two players and you are you're in line with the last defender, but you're in between basically that last defender and the second last defender, you're offside technically. Even though you're in line with that defender, that's not the line. It's the line that is before that where the other defender is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah. So the result of that is, I mean, it could have ended as a draw. It could have been an extra point for Spezia. Instead, it's 3 points for Lazio. And we'll get into the fifth to eighth position race shortly. And then the result of that error was that Pareto and Nasca, who was the VAR referee, will be suspended for the rest of the season.
Yeah, because it is a big blunder. You know, you have to expect that, especially with VAR, that they will know the rules and know how to apply them properly. And again, I guess it's, you know, like we're saying, it's probably just missed. They don't understand the rules. They probably do. Maybe they just don't think in that position that, oh yeah, I see the goalie there. So that's you know, that actually is offside.
Yeah,
right?
That's what happened. I think that's exactly what happened. Is the goalkeeper's position fooled them, exactly. And they probably looked at the last defender
and said, oh, he's in front of him, or he's you know,
behind. Yeah, he's exactly. Behind the last defender. Yeah.
Yeah. So although it's not malicious, you know, disregard for the rules, et cetera, it was obviously a poor job. So that's why they're getting suspended.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the fact that it's this late in the season.
Yeah. And it really does, again, give Lazio a little credence in this race here. But it has an impact, but it's... Yeah,
and then that goes to my comment at the beginning of the episode of the was that Mourinho made a comment about this game was that you know, the refs, you know, in 20 years ago gave an offside goal, and yet still 20 years later they're still giving offside goals.
Yeah, I mean, that's what you get in a farmers league.
I mean, I don't know, I just wanted to mention this because it's related to this game. But a genius, again, you can't argue against Mourinho's mind games. I think he has cemented himself as the best manager in terms of deflecting pressure. Not since I don't know, Julian, if you know this name, Heleno Herrera, who is the coach of the Grande Inter in the mid-60s. And he used to play, you know, that type of mind games as well, and was very active in the media. And I think Mourinho mentioned him as well when he was at Inter as a reference. And it's amazing to watch as an outsider and to immediately change the topic of the conversation to your rival and to put them under pressure and completely deflect of what happened in the Roma game and what's coming up as well.
Yeah. And we'll see again what the implications are beyond this week. Because again, there's a tight race and I promise you, we will get to explaining what that race looks like in depth. But let's get through the rest of these games first. Okay, we'll start with So Sunday's games, we had Juventus host to Venezia. Bonucci actually gets the scoring started here in the 7th minute, makes it 1-0. And then we have a lot of nothing until the second half. Aramu actually scores our goal of the match today, and I'll play that for you here. Here's the audio of that.
Dor Perez, onto Aramu, let's fly! He scored the goal in the reverse fixture that earned Venezia a point, and he's done the same here at Allianz Stadium. It's his 6th goal of the campaign, and by far, to this point, the most important.
Very nice goal. He actually, again, gets this ball, I guess, just outside of the box and is able to hit it on a half volley. Is that the best way to describe it? And hits it into the far right corner for a very beautiful, beautiful goal. It really put the pressure on, obviously, Juve, who are trying to just cement that 4th position. Make sure that no one could catch up and steal this Champions League spot from them. But not long after that, about 5 minutes later, Bonucci gets his 2nd goal of the game and is able to take the win for Juventus. So they win 2-1 on a Bonucci brace.
On his birthday.
Just to touch on that, I saw the highlights. Mm-hmm. They started Miretti, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yes, their
young
little
guy. Yeah, so both goals came off of set pieces, which he took.
Yeah, the first one, De Ligt actually heads it from that, and then Bonucci heads it into the net. And then same thing, it's Bonucci on the second one is the man on the spot to get the rebound of what was crossed in, and he pushes it home. But it's yeah, great point. Inspirational, we'll call it, from Miretti.
Okay, so the how do I formulate it into a phrase where it's actually coherent and just not ranting? The fact that it waited this long to play him is not surprising, obviously, considering Allegri's quotes about young players.
He had to suffer, Paulo.
Yeah,
and so did Juve. Juve also had to suffer.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, but the thing
for letting Allegri go. That's what he means by that.
Yeah,
is that the team needed to suffer for his sabbatical, his 2-year sabbatical.
I understand it's Venezia and all that, but when you're lacking midfielders, any rational coach, by rational I mean any, you know, modern coach, I guess you can say, would actually play a midfielder, a natural midfielder, instead of putting Danilo, who is a right back, in center midfield, and probably cost the game against Inter.
Yeah, I'll say that he's young. It would have been nice to have him earlier, but and to have a creative player like that earlier, right?
Mm-hmm. Somebody at least to take set pieces if Dybala is not on.
Exactly.
Or Arthur.
But at the same time, again, like, maybe you really don't think that he's ready, and at this point, maybe it is literally found money, because they might. There's lots of rumors that they're going to sell him now, but just roll with it at this point. You know, like, you got this kid who's got some talent. Let's see what it brings you. If you can use him. If not, then sell him maybe and bring in whoever you need to bring in.
Look, at this point, I think he's I'm speaking about Allegri. I think it's just Allegri is just a massive troll at this point, because the post match comments were, that Moretti played well, but he has to do a better job defending.
Yeah, but he hasn't suffered. I'll make him suffer.
Yeah, so. I feel like he's just like one giant troll, and like says just shit on purpose just to like piss off people.
Yeah, it checks out. He looks like a troll too.
Yeah, so
he looks like he lives under a bridge. let's move on here to Empoli host to Torino. Empoli actually gets the lead in this game from Zerkowski in the 56th, before a red card from Verre in the 60th. So they actually play a man down, where Torino make a comeback here in the 78th. They get a PK, Belotti scores. Empoli get a second red card after a double yellow for Stojanovic.
So they were both, I watched the highlights in the game as well. It was actually hilarious.
Yeah, both
PKs were handballs on him and both were yellow cards.
There you go.
There was one of them that it was questionable that maybe
they
shouldn't have called it, but, the ball hit his hand. I don't know.
Yeah. I always got to tuck your arms in the box.
Yeah, I know.
So Belotti scores on a second PK as well in the 87th. And then Belotti actually gets a tripletta in 90-plus and rounds out the scoring for a 3-1 Torino win. And despite the loss, based on the other results this weekend, Empoli have actually clinched mathematically their salvation in the Serie A for next season. So, they come up this year and they save themselves. Mostly on the form to start the year. They were very strong and very clinical in the first half, where in the second half they didn't have to really work as hard. And it's that first half of the season really paid off for them.
Yeah, they had pretty much said that back in January. They said that their first half form pretty much guaranteed them survival.
Well, and that's it. And now they finish, they have 37 points on the year. Typically, what we say is that 40 point mark, right, is the benchmark, and it turns out it's a little less than that that they needed. But again, it's around there anyways, and they've made it.
Now historically, it's actually the average is now dropping historically.
Classic.
So it's now becoming like 35, 36 to clinch salvation.
Okay, let's move on here to
One last point for Torino. Belotti scored 100 goals for Torino.
Okay, fair. Yeah, fair point. Was it the third goal that it was 100 goal?
Perhaps. I can't remember which one it was.
Yeah. Okay, moving on here. Milan host Fiorentina in a really important game, obviously, for the top of the table here. So we saw, again, midweek, Inter fumbled it, so now it really is in Milan's hands, and this Fiorentina obviously coming off a massive poor result midweek as well, theoretically should have been playing very tough Calcio, and it actually ends 1-0 in Milan's favor in the end. Leao scores very late, 82nd minute, they're able to take the 3 points from this game. There was a moment of contention, Paulo.
Well, there's a few of them. Listen, since the mister is in here, the resident Milan fan is in here, I'll grant
substitute,
him
substitute for it. You take the time. You say whatever you need to say, Paulo.
So I'll grant him one reprieve where it was a Nico Gonzalez kind of flung his arm and hit Tonali in the face. Again, it wasn't blatant, but of course MT was up in arms, clamoring for a red card. Why wasn't it a red card? Et cetera, et cetera. And then
I just want to correct you on this one. It was Male, I believe.
Oh, yes,
I think
he was
already on yellow. So that's why they wanted a second yellow.
Okay, well, again, it wasn't the kid. It was not intentional. I'm sorry, that was not intentional. If it was the one that's intentional was Theo Hernandez literally making an elbow and swinging it into his camera. I can't remember who he swung it into. I'm pretty sure that was Nico Gonzalez.
I think it was.
Yeah, it's possible. Okay, I have to look it up again. But he actually makes an elbow and swings it and literally catches him in the side of the head. That was intentional. You can tell by the way he formed the elbow. That's a red card. Okay, and that's the first incident. The second incident was Magnan takes out Nico Gonzalez in the knee. He led with his knee. Okay, the ball wasn't even close. Led with his knee and took him out. That's a PK, and it was in the box. That's a PK.
And I can confirm, based on the potato screenshot you sent.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. third was the absolutely ridiculous clearance from Terra Channel on the Liao goal. I mean, first you get 2 weeks running now. You get Acerbi smiling. Okay. After where he shouldn't have played the ball, but played the ball and essentially gifted a Milan goal. It was a second straight week where Milan was gifted a goal. And then this is after Pioli says that certain things should go Milan's way. Come on. Please. And then it's something Agnelli.
What are
the fuck out of here?
Hold on. What are you implying here that Pioli says that and then players on other teams are making
that
points
no.
to fuck up for Milan, or that Pioli has conjured some sort of magic that the universe is now allowing him to get these results? What are you implying?
I'm implying that Milan is getting away with poor refereeing decisions that is favoring Milan, and certain players have also been favoring Milan as well.
Okay. Interesting.
I wouldn't go that far.
Opposition.
What I will say is, over a 38-game season, you do need luck to go your way, and they've clearly hit a patch of good luck down the final. Well, over the past two games, for sure. We'll see if it continues over the final three. But
I will say, though, just to play Chris's advocate here. that they also have had their fair share of bad fortune, bad
for sure.
Like, i.e. Spezia game.
For sure.
Right.
Yes, but there should have been a penalty against Roma. Chiara kicked Pellegrini in the leg, no call. Who kicked Tonali? No, sorry, who kicked Osimhen? Was it Tomori? Pretty sure it's Tomori kicked Osimhen in the back of the leg, no penalty. Magnan punches a Cagliari forward in the box, no penalty. Magnan knees Nico Gonzalez in the box, no penalty.
I gotta say, Paulo, you're pulling all the receipts up, and I love it.
So when MT says, okay, refereeing decisions have not been favoring Milan.
Go off,
Stoccazzo.
King.
Stoccazzo.
Go off, King. That's it.
Stoccazzo. Okay.
We can move on. I'll say, just to try and be somewhat of a voice of reason here, you could pull those up for every team. Inter's had their fair share of those. I'm sure Juve has as well. Every team does have those throughout the course of the season. I've seen it for Inter firsthand, right? They always... Oh, the Venezia one where Dzeko elbowed the guy in the head. Yeah, mm-hmm. It happened, but we went over that. It wasn't in the lead up to the goal.
So Juve actually had none.
Oh, and another one when Giroud takes out Hakan and Çalhanoğlu on the lead up to that goal in the Milan derby.
Sanchez.
Yeah.
That one I still blame Sanchez for, because the amount of times he fucking loses the ball in his own half is insane to me. But anyways,
listen, all that to say, Julian has just admitted as well that Inter also are benefits
they've had their fair share from,
exactly,
and we can, in their game against Udinese, they had a penalty go their way, which I'll talk about, but
yeah,
we'll get there.
Okay, well, let's get to it then. Paulo, any last words on Milan? Moratorium here.
Listen, there's still three games left. Anything can happen.
Yeah, that's right. Juve actually can still technically get the title here. So let's, let's see what happens in the remaining three games. Let's move on to Udinese host to Inter, as Julian has alluded to. Julian, do you want to just quickly go through this game?
Yep. So Inter, again, after their horrible display against Bologna, they started very well. So Bastoni still hurt. So DeMarco was back in defense. Handanovic was back in the net. So they actually scored fairly early on. Perisic again, off of DeMarco corner. Perfect corner, just literally pinged it near post to Perisic's head. They go up 1-0. Udinese were fighting back a little bit, but didn't really get that many clear-cut chances. I think it was around the 30th minute or so. ball gets played down to Lautaro, who then drops it for Gagliardini, who plays it to Barella, but Lautaro kept his run going. He gets played in, tries to beat Silvestri, kind of with a doink, but Silvestri got an arm up on it. Ball lands at Jekyll's feet. He runs around Pablo Mari, who kind of swings wildly at the ball, and then Jekyll falls. So the ref, I think, was Keefe, waved play on. Jekyll, of course, was kind of throwing a temper tantrum on the field. Eventually, the VAR did ask him to go take a look. They went, reviewed it, seemed it was a penalty. So just on that note in general, I texted when it happened. I was watching the game saying, first it started with a Jekyll was awful because it was a clear-cut scoring chance.
Mm-hmm.
Then I did say it was very soft. Like, when you go back and see it, the two things I want to say, like, they can both be true at the same time is, yes, it's 100% a dive. Jekyll goes down super easily, but there is contact.
Right.
The video going around, you can watch, as Paulo's favorite Twitter group are saying, there's no contact. Just watch Pablo Mari's leg. You see his calf move when he makes contact with Jekyll. And then Jekyll, of course, is going to sell it, as 90% of strikers do. This, in my opinion, is the type of stuff I want to see removed from the game because it's not enough to make him go down. But the rules are the rules. There's contact. He goes down. Ref deems it a PK. Lautaro steps up, which already made me nervous. Hits the post, but then puts away his own rebound. Now, originally, again, Keefe ruled this as no goal because, and this was an interesting fact I didn't know. So the ball hits the post and then deflects off of Silvestri's hand, and then Lautaro heads it away. If the ball did not hit Silvestri, Lautaro can be the first one to touch it.
Sorry, say it again. If it hits the post and then Silvestri hits his hand?
Yeah, so he shot it to the, I guess, like, if I'm facing the net, he went left.
Okay.
Bounced off the post, Silvestri dove. The ball ricocheted off the post, off of Silvestri's arm,
mm-hmm.
and then Lautaro headed it in the net.
Okay.
If the ball did not hit Silvestri, mm-hmm. Lautaro can't be the first player to touch it.
Interesting.
Hold on. I think the sequence is a bit off. I think so. Lautaro hit it straight off the post. It came back to Lautaro. He headed it. Silvestri tries to stop it. It hit off Silvestri's hand. It went in the net. So if Silvestri didn't make an attempt to stop it, that goal wouldn't have counted.
Because if he...
No. So, sorry. The rule is, Inter Twitter was debating this all week. Well, all weekend. The rule is, any set piece, you can't hit the ball. One player can't hit the ball twice in a row. Which makes sense, right? Any free kick, you never see a player just kind of knock it 2 yards and then run onto it. So because no one the ball hits the post... and then hit Silvestri in the arm, then Lautaro is able to touch it. If it didn't hit Silvestri, then Lautaro technically cannot touch the ball.
Because it's still in play, and it's like taking a set piece to yourself.
Yeah.
Right. That makes sense. That doesn't make sense. Paul, do you understand that?
Yeah, I understand that. But, I thought it was you can't score your own rebound, but I thought they changed that rule as well.
No, so, I mean, I didn't even know this rule existed, but it doesn't make sense once he said it, because originally they called it off as no goal, and then you heard him talking to VAR, and then he pointed to half. So the VAR ref clearly said the ball hit Silvestri, and then, yeah. So anyways, moving on from that, it's 2-0 Inter at half. Udinese then get a free kick just outside of Inter's box. De Lufeo takes a rocket of a shot. Handanovic actually gets a nice save on it. But no Inter players followed up on the rebound. I don't know what happened. And the ball gets played back across the box for Pusetto to put away to make it 2-1. But from that point on, Inter were able to see out the game.
Yeah, so more of the story is that the title race is not over.
It's not over. Yeah. Until
December
sings.
Milan still need to drop 3 points in 3 games, which is kind of difficult, but they do have a bit of a difficult schedule, so we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, they passed the first test, though. The first test was Fiorentina here. And
they did.
And they were able to get by. So,
and that's, I just want to say, saying that, that's with Inter winning out their remaining games, which is not a guarantee.
Exactly. Okay, so that's 2-1 in Inter's favor. So the next game up was Roma-Bologna. This game actually ends 0-0. So, again, Paulo, what...
Listen, the takeaways from that, it was that Mourinho was forced to do turnover, because we'll get into the midweek games very shortly. And you can tell Bologna had a couple of chances to score. Roma didn't get into the game until Mourinho brought on Abraham in the 60th minute. Had a couple of chances, but Scrupi made a very good save to keep it 0-0. But yeah, it was because Mourinho was forced to make changes with the game in midweek.
Right. Okay.
Which is why, again, the brilliant of that press conference, no one's talking about the 0-0 draw. Everyone's talking about Mourinho's comments about Lazio, which he didn't even mention Lazio by name, by the way.
Yeah, he just said a team has scored offside, basically. Okay, moving on here to the last game of the match day, and that's Atalanta host to Salernitana. And again, Salernitana are currently on a run of good form here. So they've, going into this game, had won 3 in a row. So they had beat Sampdoria 2-1. They had beaten Udinese 1-0 and Fiorentina 2-1, obviously, in that midweek game. So next up, we had, again, Atalanta, who have not been in the best shape, I guess we'll say, to close out the season here. And they actually, Salernitana, get out to an early lead in 27th minute. Ederson scores. And this actually was looking like it was going to be another miracle from Salernitana until around the 88th minute. Pasalic scores. It's checks for VAR, but it's fine, saying that it is onside, I believe, was the concern. So Atalanta scrape a point out of this this tie, and although they were headed for the win, Salernitana, I think they're still happy with a draw and taking points from Atalanta here. So with a game in hand still, they're at 34 games played. They have 26 points, which is just 2 off of Cagliari in 17th position here. So with a win, they could be in safety.
Wild. No one would have thought that in January.
I had them getting less than 18 points.
Yes, right. Yeah. To be fair, though, they did look out of it, right? There was a time when this was seemingly impossible, so... Yeah.
I just want to point out just a couple of notes from this game. The goal of the Salernitana goal came from so Mazzocchi was a center midfielder, played into the ball, and it was headed on by Juric for Ederson, who ran in. But the Juric beat Scalvini for the header, even though, you know, he's been playing well, he's been getting into the lineup, Scalvini, that is. You can still, he's a bit raw. Yes, he plays with personality, he plays with confidence, but it's those types of mistakes that have been costing Atalanta down the stretch this season. You know, playing him in a quarterfinal in the Europa League, you're now regretting loaning out Lovato. You know what I mean? Certain decisions that were made on the transfer market have came back and bitten Atalanta in the ass in down the stretch this season.
Yeah, a young mistake.
Yeah.
A young mistake.
Exactly,
and,
yeah.
That's
right. And also the assist for the Atalanta goal from Malinowski was outstanding. I picked out Pasalic, who thread the line to get in one-on-one with Sepe to score.
Yeah. And again, with that, they scrape a point out of the draw, and they maintain their position here. So just to kind of go through the contentious points of the table here. So obviously at the top, we have Milan and Inter battling for first and second here with 2 points separating them. And we've kind of talked that through. But effectively, again, if Milan went out, they win, of course. But if Inter went out and Milan drop, they would have to at least lose a game, I think, at this point, right?
Yeah, they need to drop minimum 3 points for Inter to catch them.
To overtake them. So that's the case up top there. Napoli and Juve, I guess, are battling at this point for 3 and 4. But they cannot, those teams cannot fall out of the top four. So the Champions League positions are settled. It is Milan, Inter, Napoli, and Juventus. Not sure the order, something like that. Now, as for fifth, sixth, seventh, and eighth, that is another battle. So in fifth, right now, after their win, Lazio are in fifth with 59 points. Roma, with their draw, are also at 59 points, with identical records, 17, 8, and 10. But I guess Lazio must have the difference there. I'm not sure if it's goal differential or if it's a head-to-head thing. But
well, on paper right now, it's Lazio has a 2-goal difference or a better goal differential.
Yeah.
But I think... Did Lazio beat Roma in the first?
So Roma won 3-0 in March.
And then in the first half of the season?
So let's check Roma's losses here. Lazio, let's see here. Lazio beat Roma 3-2 in September.
So I think that head-to-head won't matter. So maybe because
they both have wins effectively.
Yeah.
So it just is differential at this point.
I think it's goal different, like overall goal differential. Exactly. Because it's two wins. Yeah.
Which again is plus 17 for Lazio and plus 15 for Roma. So that's why. So again, they're both on 59 points. Now you guys are saying based on the results going, you know, or what's happened with other competitions here, that seventh position is still going to be a Conference League spot.
Yes.
Right. So 5-6 is for Europa League. Now it's seventh position right now is Atalanta with 56 points with their draw, who are tied with Fiorentina, who lose that position after losing to Milan this week. So fifth through eighth is still a toss up. There's only, I guess, 3 points separating them. Obviously, again, with some losses and some wins on both ends of that spectrum, it could be completely reversed, right? You could have Atalanta and Fiorentina still in Europe, whereas Lazio miss out on it or Roma miss out on it. So it's going to be a very important last three games for all of these teams to kind of solidify themselves in some European competition.
And with a little luck, you could even... mentioned Verona still have a very slim chance of sneaking into seven.
So there are 52 points, right?
So because officially on the Serie A table, Fiorentina are in seventh because they beat Atalanta twice this season.
So that and at that point, it's not the obviously differential. It would be head-to-head.
Exactly.
Right.
So actually, Roma are in fifth because I think because in the two games, they have a better goal differential so against
that's
Lazio.
That's what you have on the official online? On Serie A,
the way Serie A has the Classifica, yeah.
Okay, so we'll see again if that maintains, obviously, throughout here. But obviously, some things can still change. They may not finish the level on points, and it might be a moot point, but it'll obviously be contentious if it remains, again, level on points.
Yeah. And then, not to count on Hellas Verona, they have 52 points and only 4 points back of Fiorentina and Atalanta.
Yeah, that's what Julian's saying. Again, there's still a chance for even that seventh position, which is only 4 points away for them. Mm-hmm. Okay, so again, going through the bottom or the middle table, again, it's maybe just jockeying for position at that point, but what's the most important to talk about, I guess, is obviously those last three places and those around them to, again, secure safety. So Venezia after their loss, maintained 22 points. Genoa, again, after their loss, maintained 25 points, although they have a game extra played over Venezia. Salernitana are in 18th with their draw with 26 points and a game in hand. So, again, they are at 34. And Cagliari, with their loss, maintained 28 points. So they do not do themselves any favors, like we mentioned. And Salernitana, with a win, would be safe at this juncture. Would be in the safe zone, at least. It sounds like Spezia and Sampdoria, again, at 33, are close. They're not mathematically safe, but they're much closer than, obviously, Cagliari would be at this point to escaping relegation.
Yeah, so, and just put the games, I think Julian wanted to talk about how Salernitana play Venezia on Thursday,
yeah, right,
which is the makeup game.
Yeah, exactly.
And then on that, you know, on the weekend, it's Salernitana versus Cagliari.
Exactly. So it's a massive week for them. If they come out of this week with, they get 4 points here.
Yeah.
That's huge. Huge for them. Because if let's say they tie Cagliari, let's say that's the tie and they beat Venezia. So that's still 4 points. They'd be at 30 and Cagliari would be at 29.
Yeah.
If it's the other way around, let's say they tie Venezia and they beat Cagliari. So Cagliari would still be at 28 and they'd be at 30. Right, so it's a 4 point week is not going to be crazy. It would be fantastic for them, and it also might end up being a 0 point week. So we'll see, right? But yeah, just a crazy run of form here to try and pull off the Davide Nicola special.
And also general play Juventus on Friday. Also, if we're also talking about the Europa League positions, so Lazio play Sampdoria. Again, it's still that relegation Europa League race.
Mm-hmm.
Spezia play Atalanta, same situation as Lazio Sampdoria.
Yeah.
And Milan play Hellas Verona.
Right. So you have teams here that are fighting for legitimate reasons, right? So none of these games are going to be, you know, pushover games where a team is really, you know, solidified or really going to be not pushing for anything, right? They really need the points. So it's all to play for in all these games.
And to round up the weekend on the Monday, it's Fiorentina-Roma.
Massive.
Yeah, massive.
Oh, it's the end of the season. You'll have to see it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay, so that is the match day. 35 plus obviously last week's roundup. So why don't we take a break? We've been talking a long time. We'll take a quick break here. We'll get into the Conference League, which we alluded to, and some City B stuff just to round up the show here. But we'll take a quick break right now. We'll be right back. And welcome back to the podcast. All right. So just to close out the show here, we almost forgot about the Serie A last week, but we couldn't forget about Thursday's matchup, which is the greatest competition on earth. I don't know how else to describe it, right?
Well, I mean, Mourinho said as much in the post game.
Yeah, true.
Pretty much confirmed about the competition. And that it would be what you'd expect from a Champions League game. So,
right this whole time.
Exactly. So, yeah. You know, we've been taking the piss, but we were half joking.
Didn't know that the piss was what we needed all along.
Well, the real
piss was inside of us this whole time. Is there a better way to say that?
No, but okay. First, before we get on to, you know, making
the real piss was the friends we made along the way.
Exactly, yes. There we go. So game ended 1-1. It was an intriguing game to watch.
Between Leicester City and Roma.
Exactly, between Leicester City and Roma. I know Roma took the lead. I believe it was Abraham that scored.
No, Pellegrini, I think.
Pellegrini, okay. Oh yeah, that was right. It was a nice shot to the top corner. So Roma took an early lead and they had no choice but to sit back. And it was all Leicester beyond that. Even Mourinho said so. They couldn't do that. They couldn't really counterattack after they took the lead. And eventually, I think it was I'll just say his last name, Lookman, that scored the tying goal for Leicester. Honestly, Leicester were a bit unfortunate not taking the lead as well. They had a couple of chances that Rui Patricio made some good stops and kept it at 1-1. Overall, it was a good draw for Roma, essentially being away from home and not being able to create as many chances as they would like to, and essentially allowing Leicester to take control of the play. Zaniolo was ineffective, to say the least. I think he eventually came off as well. Honestly, Roma were lucky to come away with the draw on the whole balance of the game.
So, of note, the box score has it officially as an own goal for Leicester from Mancini.
That's right. It came off Mancini as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Again, of note, we obviously know the history of Leicester City and their march towards greatness a couple years back in the Premier League with Claudio Ranieri. However, it has been declared on his behalf, or he I think is the one who has said it, that of course between the two teams, he is tifo for Roma.
Yeah, I mean, he's born in Rome, I believe it was the Testaccio, one of the neighborhoods in Rome.
I think you're thinking Rui Pasticcio.
Yeah, no, Testaccio. And he said as such that even when he coached it, he said he was coaching it as a fan as well. I don't expect anything less from Claudio Ranieri, true gentleman of the game.
Yeah.
But for me, I'm looking at it as well, the fact that both teams made turnovers, play a turnover in their league games that they played. I know Leicester played Tottenham, and Brendan Rodgers essentially changed the whole team, which pretty much cost them the game against Tottenham. I know Tottenham won. I can't remember what the score was because I don't really follow the Premier League very closely, but Tottenham won. And like I said during the Serie A segment, Mourinho couldn't afford to change his entire squad. He doesn't have that much depth where he can put it out a full starting 11 and still put in a performance that could, you know, guarantee him a point. Here, he only changed half the team. I know Carlos Perez has been doing relatively well when he came in. I know he had a couple of chances in the Serie A game, but Mourinho had that delicate chance to. You can't risk that fifth spot and getting into the Europa League for the fact that you're playing in the semifinal. So I know he did that with Tottenham when they went to the League Cup final, I think it was, before he was sacked and he couldn't manage that final. And he made a comment about that, I believe, a couple of weeks ago. In the preview to the first leg, press conference to the first leg.
Right. Okay, well, this sets up a midweek game this week on the 5th, on Thursday, for Roma, of course, and that's host to Leicester City this time. So obviously it'll be at the Olympico, and it'll be a important fixture. Winner, of course, moves on to the final, the inaugural final of the Conference League.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll play the winner of Feyenoord and Marseille. So yeah, it's going to be an important leg, obviously, if it goes to extras, if it's still tied. There's no away rule here, so away goal rule rather. So if it's tied after the 90 in Rome here, it will continue to extra time and then to penalties. So it's sure to be a entertaining game.
Well, just a note about the second leg. Another note about the second leg as well. Essentially, that game was pretty much sold out in, you know, the first hour. I remember, I saw there was like 500,000 people on the wait list just to, you know, log in or get onto the website to buy a ticket.
Mm-hmm.
And the Stadio Olimpico only holds, you know, just under 70,000.
Right.
So it's going to be a sold out Stadio Olimpico. I'm looking forward to watching the game just to get a sense of the atmosphere. I've been to the Stadio Olimpico, and I don't think I've seen it that full. And I've been to a Roma-Napoli game, and I remember just at that game, maybe there was about, you know, 45,000. Mm-hmm. But you can just feel the vibrations from I was sitting on the Curva Nord side, and you can feel the waves of energy from the Curva Sud, which is the Roma ultra stand, and it is something incredible to feel. And I'm honestly jealous that I cannot be at that game, because I think it would be an outstanding game just to witness as a Calcio fan.
Yeah, and I mean, again, you're speaking about the atmosphere, and I feel like, especially coming off, you know, the last couple of years that we have, and, you know, the uncertainty on a lot of things, on a lot of fronts, having fans back in stadiums this year has been great. And just the fact that, again, Roma are competing for, you know, I mean, they've obviously, they're out of it on the Scudetto front, but to compete for some silverware is massive for this, I guess, this club, because, you know, it's something that has been escaping them for so long during their lifetime, right? So they've won some Scudetti, right? But it's kind of like, there's that ongoing joke of Roma's bonsai tree, right? And that's it, which is probably dead. The leaves are, you know, off that bonsai tree anyway. But yeah, again, it's just so... what I'm trying to get at is, you know, the atmosphere, it's almost merited, and it's a long time coming too, because, you know, fans are really trying to come back to normal. A lot of normalcy is trying to be recovered here. And they just want to enjoy things like this again. And that's what hopefully will come of this. And we'll see that. Let's hope that everything is going to get back to normal and people can enjoy this.
You know, just talking on the sporting front. You know, I remember Roma has made it to the semi-final. I think it was against Liverpool in the CL, in the Champions League, and then it was against Manchester United in the Europa League recently. And maybe the semi-final because of the fact that Manolas scored to come back against Barcelona.
Yeah,
not since that semi-final per se that we have this buzz about, you know, Roma and Europe.
I would even argue Italian squad in Europe outside of probably Atalanta a couple of years ago.
Yeah, that's a good point, because Fonseca is a manager that doesn't inspire confidence like Mourinho does, right? Mm-hmm. And I think we mentioned on this podcast before, if Roma wins the Conference League, I think it would be a massive success as a season on the whole. And I think Mourinho's objective to start the season, I may be wrong, but please correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure, was to aim for top five finish.
Yeah, I don't recall, but...
Yeah, I'm not sure on that one either.
Yeah, I mean... Again, realistically, that was probably within the range, especially, you know, coming in and being able to provide the structure that he provides. I think that's, again, a likely scenario. And I mean, you're paying the guy $12 million a year, so hopefully he gets you that result. But anyways,
needless to say, I hope obviously I hope Romo wins here. Just as a casual fan in general.
Yep.
To have some sort of relevance on the European stage,
and a Roman sympathizer.
Yeah. Oh, that's what happens when you live in Rome. But anyway,
that's it.
On the other hand, I think a Roma Marseille final would set it up very well, because I know Lazio fans absolutely hate Marseille as well, because of what happened there. I think they blocked the travel of Lazio fans to Marseille. So I think it would be which team is hated the most in the finals, and it would be hilarious to watch that type of a Roma Marseille final.
Yeah. All right, so that sets up this Thursday's clash. Outside of that, I think that's kind of it for this week that we really need to look forward to. We already mentioned the makeup game for Serie A, and then, of course, the weekend matchups. Paul, why don't you set us up or just to kind of help us understand what Serie B is up to? What's Serie B minute?
Okay, so I believe that there is one more game left in Serie A. So they played the 37th round on the weekend.
Sorry, Serie B?
Yes, exactly. Serie B. Thank you, Michael. Brescia lost 1-0 to Cittadella. Ascoli beat Cremonese 1-0. Lecce lost 2-1 to Venezia. Monza beat Benevento 3-0. Pisa tied Cosenza 1-1. Spal beat Frosinone 3-0, and that's pretty much the most important results of the weekend. So this leads into a very tight final day. So we got Lecce at 68 points, Monza 67 in second place, Cremonese in third with 66. So all those three teams have a chance to either win or get directly promoted to Serie A. So in fourth, with 64 points is Pisa. Brescia in fifth with 63. Benevento in sixth with 63. Ascoli in seventh with 62 points. And Frosinone in eighth with 58 points. So just a reminder, 3 to 8 go into a playoff system where I believe 5 plays 8 and 6 plays 7th. I believe it's a one-off, where if it's a draw, the higher placed team moves on. And then I think the final is 2 legs. I may be wrong, I have to double check that. But
I think that's right.
Yeah. So now, as I said, so with 3 points, so for the title at least, it's between Lecce, Monza, and Cremonese. I believe we are partial to Monza getting promoted for obvious reasons.
For bunga bunga reasons, yes.
Yeah, exactly. So the most important games that will affect the title: Monza play Perugia, Lecce play Pordenone, and where's Cremonese? Cremonese plays Como. So probably the hardest on paper is Monza versus Perugia.
Right, and those again are the last games.
That's the last round of games, exactly. Right. Yeah. So that's it. We'll tune in next week to figure out who gets promoted and such.
Yeah.
I'm very partial to the Serie B playoffs. I think they're very entertaining to watch, just because of the intensity and the fact that, especially the first rounds, where a draw benefits the higher ranked team.
Right.
So I think that's unfair, in my opinion. But if Mr. Chris was here, we'll get into an argument about that. But I digress. Moving on to Lega Pro. We'll only focus on Pescara here because of the massive bracket that is the Lega Pro playoffs system. But Pescara tied, I believe it is Pistoia. No, Carrarese, which is coached by Antonio Di Natale. Ooh. So they tied them 2-2. and Pescara moved on based on the fact that they're higher, that they placed higher in their league this season. And they, in the next round, they play Gubbio.
Gubbio.
Yeah.
Bravo. Yeah. That's it. Okay. Yeah. Well, yeah, again, like Paulo says, we'll obviously keep tabs and see what has transpired after this week, going into the next one, to see kind of where that table stands and who we'll be seeing next year in Serie A. But can't wait. Cannot wait. Okay, well, that's really the show, though. So I guess some final notes. Make sure you're following us on our socials. So on Twitter and on Instagram at RTW Calcio. Gentlemen, do you have anything else to add?
Well, next week, Chris will be back. Mr. Chris will be back. In terms of actual sport, Calcio, like I said, I'm excited for Thursday. I'm looking forward to the Roma game. And I think that's pretty much what I'm looking forward to, unless Inter and Milan start dropping points and Juventus wins out.
Yeah. Giuliano?
Listen, I'm going to be nervous every match day until it's done, basically. But I think, Paulo, I know you have your hopes set on that, but I think if Inter drop any points, I think the Scudetto race is over.
So, let's get it on recording here. What happens if the top three teams lose and Juve win out? Do we want to place a bet? Do you want to have something going on here? Some sort of meal bet, perhaps?
I was going to say I'll bid Paulo a dinner, but...
I think that's fair. I think that's only fair. But if Inter win, Paulo owes you two dinners. Because of based on other past bets that
we've had to meet up. Paulo's secretly cheering for Inter to win. If it's between Inter and Milan, I think Paulo's cheering for Inter.
It's odd, but I guess he is.
No, I'm telling you, no. No, that fan base does not deserve a Scudetto win. Yeah. I'm sorry. Honestly, I could handle Inter Twitter, but MT, no, it's just, no. Honestly, perhaps the lowest IQ fan base in sports. Like lower,
be sure,
lower.
Be sure to clip this and put it on RTW Calcio Twitter as a point to listen to this episode, because I think you'll have a lot of people interested in your views here.
Like, listen, they don't even understand basic rules. Anyway, there's in terms of North American sports, because you know we're based in North America, there are the Toronto Maple Leafs. That fan base, which you, Michael, you know well,
yeah,
could be on par, like, and you know, being in North America, and you both are hockey fans, that is saying something.
Okay, yeah. I'll accept it. I'll allow it.
Yeah,
only because I'm trying to wrap this up. So we'll be back obviously next week. We'll have a lot more to chat about. There's going to be, the bottom of the table is going to look a lot different, or could look much more the same, I guess, technically. But there's going to be some clarity is what I'm trying to say. There's going to be a lot of clarity after this week for the bottom and possibly the top. So we look forward to that. Until then, make sure you're watching Thursday's game rather, and the midweek game from Serie A, to make sure that you're up to date.
Which is on Thursday, I'm pretty sure.
Right, there you go. So it's Thursday's games. Just again, to make sure that you're up to date with all the happenings leading into the weekend. But beyond that, we'll see you after those matches, and we'll be able to recap everything for you. Thank you for listening, and we'll be back in a week's time. All right. Ciao, bye.